Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is. Oh, that is just not going to work at all. Oh, never accept a dare from Mark Walsh. Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is Leslie Kaminoff, and you may know me as the co-author of the international bestseller, Yoga Anatomy. But I'm also the co-founder of yogaanatomy.net. Now, that's a platform we built 11 years ago where we offer online courses and in-depth anatomy modules that support teachers, teacher trainings, and students all over the world. So that's why we are thrilled to be sponsoring all the incredible sessions here on the Yoga Channel, including my own. And if you feel a connection with the way I teach, I have some great news for you. We are extending scholarships to all members of the Embodiment Conference. And you can find that scholarship info and links to yogaanatomy.net in the description for this presentation and in the show notes. In the meantime, enjoy your body, enjoy your breath, and enjoy your conference. And I'll see you online.
I'm going to give a lovely warm welcome to Chase Broussard tonight. He is the YACP founder and director of the Yoga Well Institute. He also brings with him a strong background in using yoga therapeutic technique, as well as doing yoga as an intervention in scientific research as well. So Chase, I'll let you take it away and explain some of your session tonight.
Thank you very much. So my name is Chase Bossart, and I am executive director of the Yoga Well Institute. I was a longtime student of Mr. TKV Deshikachar over something like 20 plus years. I spent 5 years total in Chennai with him studying. So I always warn people when I present that I'm presenting from a particular perspective. And if something I'm presenting doesn't jive with what you know already, just try to be open. And remember, yoga, if yoga works, you become more you. So you shouldn't listen to something I am saying and take that on as the truth over your own knowing, right? So what I will be presenting today is a particular model of embodiment from the yoga tradition. So, as mind-body therapies and as mind-body connection has become more and more the rage in the West, there's been a lot of discussion about how does yoga work? How does these, what is the mind-body connection? And you have things like mind, body, spirit, and, you know, there's a lot of generating of ideas from a Western model as to how yoga works. But what I would like to say is that this work has already been done by yoga itself. And if we'll just be open to some Indian models, then we'll make some real fast and quick gains based on that. So what I'm going to present tonight is a particular anatomy. And I use that word very specifically because it is a model for how the human system functions. And as such, it explains how and why yoga works. When I say yoga, I'm not talking only about asana. I'm talking about all of the different tools and principles, from movements to breathing to attention games to sound to ethics, spirituality, daily living, etc. So this is a particular model explaining what is the human system how does it work? And by understanding it, we'll also be able to see what is it that I can do for the person who is in front of me with this issue or that problem, etc. So before I go a little bit further, I want to define a minute what is yoga, because there's so many ideas out there about what is yoga. And again, I want to come back to what is it that the Indian tradition itself is saying about yoga. So there are many, many, many different definitions of yoga. You got yoga ha, chitta vritti nirodha. Yoga is the restraint of the activities of the mind. You get from Bhagavad Gita, you get yoga is equanimity. You get yoga is that which separates you from your connection to suffering. You get yoga is skill and action. There's a thesaurus which says yoga, these are the five synonyms of the word yoga. They are sannahana. Yoga is a preparation that protects you. Upaya. Yoga is a tool. It's something that helps you to do what you could not do before. Dhyanam. Yoga is meditation. This is so interesting. If you look at the history of yoga texts, practices, etc., in India over at least the last 2,000 years, by far the most important practice has been meditation. Secondarily, pranayama, conscious breathing. This is not a primarily body-focused practice. Of course, mind is in the body. The body is breathing. Body has emotions, etc. All those things must be accounted for and worked with. However, yoga has traditionally been thought of as about the mind. Sangati means linking, often translated as union. Yoga is the union between the individual soul and the great soul, or yoga is the union of body, breath, and mind, etc. Fine. I personally prefer linking. Yoga is a game of conscious linking. Wherever you put your attention, there will be an experience. That experience will influence the way that your system is functioning. And in fact, experiences are the currency of yoga. We should be thinking of yoga as intentionally engineered experiences. Of course, there are experiences for the body, there are experiences for the breath, there are experiences for the mind, there are for the emotions, etc. But what causes our system to change, or what causes us to be different or feel different, are experiences. Yoga, it's a game of intentional linking. Yoga, it's a science of engineered experiences, etc. Okay. And the last one is yukti, which means adaptive intelligence. Yoga is the capacity to respond authentically to each and every situation as it arises. There are many other definitions, etc. But the point of this is that yoga is a way of being. It's a certain operation of your system, meaning that your body and your breath and your mind and your emotions, your behaviors, etc., are operating in a certain way. This is what yoga is. Excuse me. So when we start talking about a way of being, we have to ask the question, well, what are we talking about? Because of course we walk around, we eat, we sleep, you know, we have relationships, et cetera, but what is it that we're actually discussing? What is it that we're talking about? And if we look at the human system and we think of joints and ligaments and tendons and muscles and alignments, et cetera, that's all very effective and fine, but it actually has no basis in the Indian tradition. If you look at the Indian tradition, there are no textual references about aligning the joints. There is no textual references to tendons and muscles, etc. Yoga, from a Indian perspective, has not been using this language. This language is a Western overlay on the practice. So then the question is, well, so what is the body? What is the mind, etc., from the perspective of yoga? And this is what I like to explain. There are many models. There are many anatomies and physiologies that were developed in India and which serve as the foundation for the understanding of what is yoga and how does it work, how does it impact our system. All right. So the model that I want to talk about today is from the Taittiriya Upanishad, and it is called the Panchamaya model. Most people know it as the Panchamaya Kosha model, or they know it as the five koshas. But even that is a little bit of a misnomer, because the word kosha does not appear in the original text. In fact, it takes about 1500 years for a commentary to use the word kosha. So I prefer to call it by its actual name, Panchamaya. Panchamaya. Pancha means five. Maya means something that is all-pervading, okay? So we have the five all-pervadings, Panchamaya. And this text is called, the source text which it describes this is the Taittiriya Upanishad. I'm going to share my screen so you can see. The Taittiriya Upanishad. All right. Taittiriya Upanishad describes the human system as having five dimensions. And each one of these dimensions is pictured in the form of a bird. Can see like this. So Panchamaya, saying it as the five mayas, is a little bit of a misnomer, because it's not simply five mayas. It's each of the mayas also has five parts. You can see there's a head, there's a right wing, there's a left wing, there's a trunk and a tail. All right. So if we look at it a little bit further, what we can see is each one of these five mayas actually is its own bird. And all five of them are together as a single unit. It's actually not correct to think of the mayas in this way. Here is the body, and then outside the body you have pranamaya that's around it like this, and then outside of the pranamaya you have manomaya. And this is, you know, some places they are very specific exactly how far outside the body this is, etc. The reason I don't like the word kosha is because kosha means bag. Literally, a kosha is a bag. So when you talk about the bladder, you talk about the bag of urine, or the stomach is the food bag, etc. The point of a bag is to keep things separate. The whole point of Panchamaya is that none of these are actually separate. We can talk about five different aspects of the human system, but you can't say that they're separate. Even to present them here as five birds, five different birds with their, you know, it makes it look like it's a separate, each thing is separate, but it's not like that. This is a much more useful representation of what the five dimensions are, because what it's showing is that even though we can talk about the different parts of our human system in different ways, in other words, we can say that breath is not the same thing as body. But you can't separate body from breath. You know, if the body stops breathing, you have a very different body, right? Same thing with mind. You can say that mental activity, or what you perceive the mind doing, is not the same thing as breathing. It's not the same thing as the moving of your finger or the turning of your head, etc. So we need to differentiate mind from breath from body, but at the same time, you can't separate it. So this model provides five mayas, and they are listed as annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, vijnanamaya, and anandamaya. So you can see that I have translated them along the way here. So remember, each one of these five is also depicted as a bird. It has five parts. So we're going to go through that in a minute and look at what these five parts are. But what you have to remember is that from a yoga perspective, it's not correct to say body, mind, and spirit. That is not actually a legitimate yoga anatomy. Okay, fine. I mean, I'm fine. It has utility. Lots of people are using it, et cetera, et cetera. But if we're really going to be talking about doing yoga, I think we should be using the anatomies which yoga utilized over a few thousand years as it itself was developing. So what are the five dimensions of the human system? Annamaya means the all-pervading, which is made up of food. You are what you eat. You know, and you can see that throughout your life, you're putting things into your body and they are becoming assimilated and some portion is eliminated, right? So actually the word anna is very interesting because you get an means is a verb to nourish. Na means not. This is not actually a proper nirukti. This is not actually a proper breakdown of the Sanskrit word, but it's very useful to look at it. Anna. Whatever you take into your body will either nourish you or kill you. Anna, okay? So Annamaya is the physical part of our system, what you can actually see. Then there's Pranamaya. Pranamaya is the energy which operates our system. There's a difference between having a toaster and having a toaster that's plugged in. The plugged in part of the plugged in is the pranamaya. You can say anamaya is a little bit like anatomy and pranamaya is a little bit like physiology. It's one thing to have a liver, but it's another thing to have a liver that's functioning. It's one thing to have lungs. It's another thing to have lungs that function. And in fact, when we look at pranamaya, it's giving us some hints about the manner and way of the body's functioning. Then you look at manomaya. Manas is the mind. The word manas, in different contexts, it means some different things. But generally speaking, manas is the portion of the mind that analyzes, perceptual information, sensory information. Manas is the function, is the part of the mind, largely speaking, this is not true across all Indian texts, that analyzes the sensory information. So, intellect is not a great translation, but we can say attention is manomaya is a lot about where you put your attention, how you learn, etc. Then you have vijnanamaya. This will be, to understand this better, we really need to look at the bird that's from the vijnanamaya level. And what you see when we do that, and which we will in a few minutes, what you see when we do that is the vijnanamaya level has its description is about the way that our personality functions. The word vijnana, again, there's lots of different translations in Indian tradition, but vijnanamaya means the kind of knowing that is special to me. Jnana means knowledge, or I prefer knowing. Vi is short for vishesha, special. Each person has a way of perceiving and communicating and believing that is deeper than simply the operation of their attention. And lastly, anandamaya. Anandamaya means the emotions. If you look at the word ananda, a means continuously, without interruption, and nand is to be glad. The Anandamaya level is the level in our system that emotions express on. So what we can see by this diagram, which came from Mr. Deshikachar, what we can see from this diagram is that all of the different aspects of our system are interconnected. So when one thing shifts, all the others shift as well. This is why when you stub your toe, immediately you go, there's Anandamaya problem. What happens? There's a breath shift. Then there's a there's a mind and a perceptional behavioral shift. Who put this here? And we have some, the rest of the Anandamaya, we have emotional, the rest of the day, I just feel kind of bad. So what happened? There was a physical shift. My breathing changed. The way I analyze and perceive also shifted. So did my emotions. The opposite is also true, or actually any one of these is true. I take my attention and I put it on the news. Oh, immediately my emotions are provoked. And my breath shifts, becomes a little short and shallow. And then my muscles tighten. And a little while later, I'm wondering why I have such a splitting headache. Right? So this is a model explaining the interconnectedness of our human system. Another way of saying it, it's explaining how our entire system is embodied. You can't separate out breathing from the body, or mind from the body, or our personality, or our emotions from the body. And you can't separate the body out from any of those either. When one shifts, all the others shift as well. I'm sure that everyone in this seminar, you all have had the experience of yoga changing your life. And you want to try to understand it. Like, how does that work? You know, I was, let's give it a fictitious example. So, you know, there you are in a meeting and the boss says, so what do you think about that? And you actually tell her, well, I don't like it too much because. And then immediately after that, you like recognize like, I've never said anything like that to the boss. I'm always the yes person. Why am I, you know, and you watch and actually you're telling your partner, this doesn't quite work for me, but this other way would work. And can we do it this other way? And you recognize like, oh, you know, again, theoretical examples, you know, there's been this shelter in place and you can't go out and can't do anything for 6 months. And I actually don't feel that bothered by it. How is that possible? How is that possible? Because before I would have been so upset and I would have been calling all my friends and trying to figure out what is this and how does it work and what do I need to do? And la, 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 and so much drama. And now it's sort of like, whatever. So the question is, how does that work? Well, here is an explanation. You go, you start to think about like, what's different in my life? Oh, well, I've been doing yoga. You know, and oftentimes it's like one class a week or, you know, maybe two classes a week. And somehow that's like the only different thing in my life, and my life is really different. How does that work? Okay, well, in yoga, you're doing something different with your body. You're doing something different with your breathing. And you're doing something different with your attention. Those shifts on these three levels, then naturally will cause these other two levels, the Vijnanamaya and the Anandamaya level, to shift as well. It's not just a physical practice. It's not just a breathing practice. It means that all the different aspects are interconnected. And so when one changes, all the others change as well. So important. And also explaining how it works. I would love some questions from the audience or some comments. If people have them, it'd be a great time to communicate them and send. So what we get from this model from the Taittiriya Upanishad is we get an anatomy, an Indian anatomy, which is explaining how your system works that is based on a holistic model. So what does that mean? That means that you're not just a body. You're a breathing body. You're not just a breathing body. You are a thinking, breathing body. Moreover, you're not only a thinking, breathing body, you're a behaving, thinking, breathing body. And you are a feeling, behaving, thinking, breathing body. Want to change how you feel? Want to shift something on the Anandamaya level? Well, if you shift anything on any of these other four levels, it will have some impact on the Anandamaya. This is why when you do breathing exercises, pranayama, pranamaya, it changes the way your mind functions, changes the way that your communication functions, changes the way that your emotions are operating.
Chase, we're getting some amazing questions. There's one from May right now, and she's just wondering, how do you visualize a bird and the five layers?
Right. So this, how do you visualize the bird? So let me come over to my direction. So each one of these five layers has five aspects. And it's given as a bird, because the bird is a model of freedom. In order for a bird can go anywhere. I mean, if you think of like a duck or a cormorant or something, you know, that swims as well as flies, you know, so a bird can go anywhere. However, it can only go if all the different parts are balanced and whole. The head needs to be of a certain apportioned size. If the head is too big, it will drag the bird down. If the head is too small, directing course and whatnot is hard to find. If one wing is broken, the bird will not be able to fly. If one wing is strongly developed and the other wing is not very well developed, the bird will not be able to fly. If the tail is too big, peacocks do not migrate. If there is no tail, then there is nothing to stabilize. So what the bird gives us is a way of thinking about the different aspects of our human system and then looking to see what is it that's actually operating well in this person and what is perhaps operating not so well. I'm going to switch my.
We have another question here as well. And Pete was wondering, in regards to the bird, how can you relate it back to the eight limbs of yoga?
Well, so this is one of the beautiful things of the Indian system. There are different models. It's not a single model. So the eight limbs of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra provide practices that can balance individual aspects of the human system. For instance, if you look at yama and niyama, these are things that work on a person's relationships, work on the person's relationship with others, and person's relationship with themselves. So that is, it has things like ahimsa, which is violence, and satyam, which is communication. Satyam means honesty. Ahimsa means not being mean, not being excessively violent. Ahimsa means not lying. Asteya, not taking what's not yours. These are things that work on the Vijnanamaya level of the bird. They're specific practices. Then if you want to talk about asana, right? Asana, there are instructions in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra about how to practice. He doesn't give any examples of particular postures. He says, here's how you should operate your system. You should operate your system in a way that is stable, sthira, and comfortable, sukha. Sthira, sukha, asanam. So you can see Patanjali is not giving specific forms. He's talking about the process of how to practice. Practice in a way where the body is stable and comfortable. Why? Because that will be related to the health of the Anamaya level. Pranamaya is another one. Patanjali gives the characteristics of pranayama. He says, as a result of pranayama, the breath becomes long and subtle. Dirga Sukshma. This is second chapter number 50. Previous reference was second chapter number 46. So, making the breath long and smooth, long and subtle, is a way of influencing the prana maya dimension of the bird. And of course, if we talk about meditation, Patanjali's Yoga Sutra has several different meditation instructions. There is in the third, beginning of the third chapter with the end of Ashtanga Yoga, the eight limbs, you get Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. These are different levels of, different depths of perception. So when you put your attention somewhere and keep it there, and it does not wander here or there, this is dharana. And then when there's a deepening of it, and it becomes as though there is only the place where you've put your attention and the awareness that I am observing, many people will say that it's like being locked in. Others will say it's like the place where you put your attention has grown to take over your perception. But it will give you a experience, and that experience will have a feeling, anandamaya. And the place where you put your attention will have its own characteristics, its own patterning, vijnanamaya level. So what we get from this, from looking at the panchamaya model, is that we get a map for applying yoga practices. And the map is rather specific. Here are different ways that you can work on the pranamaya level. Here are different ways that you can work on the manomaya. Here's different ways you can work on vijnanamaya, etc. And of course, you may not be able to work directly on a specific level. For whatever reason, the person might not be ready, or they might not be open to the tools that are for that level, etc. Well, in that case, you work on a different level. And the impact of the work on that level will come down and influence the operation of the other level. So Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, the Ashtanga yoga, is a set of practices that describe how to develop a state of yoga. What did we say earlier in the hour? We said that yoga is a description of a particular way that your system can operate that is considered very positive. A state of yoga has a lot of benefits. Question is, how do you get into a state of yoga? Well, one of the answers is the Ashtanga yoga practices show the process of getting it. They don't give specific examples. Do this. Have a gratitude journal. Make sure you do so many repetitions of Maha Mudra. No, it doesn't work like that. It is explaining, have these qualities while you are operating the physical. Have these qualities while you're operating the breath. Have these qualities while you are operating the attention. And when you do that, you'll be moving your system towards a state of yoga, because the experiences you generate through the process of operating your system in that way will be experiences that are in the direction of or aligned with a state of yoga. I think one of the things that's really missing in our yoga cultures in the West is context. You go onto the YouTube, you can find hundreds of hours of people explaining how to do a particular technique. Very detailed. A lot of it is very skilled. But why would you do that technique? What is the utility of that? How does it fit into your life, etc.? The context of why is largely opaque. It has not. We're trying, and we try to fill that void by using Western biochemical models. It's not necessary. We have really wonderful models explaining how these techniques work and how to apply them. These anatomies and physiologies are maps describing how to apply the techniques. We don't have time to do this very in depth, but let me just point out these different pieces that I have written here are the Sanskrit words that are given for the different parts of the bird on that Maya. Shraddha is the head of the Vijnana Maya level, dimension, aspect, whatever word you want to use. Rirtam is the word that is used for the right wing of the bird on the Vijnana Maya level. Satyam, left wing. Yoga, the trunk. Mahat, the tail. So, what is this saying? Some interpretation is necessary. So, what is this saying? Well, it says, in the behavioral and personality aspect of a human, what level of belief we have in ourselves, in others, in teachings, in structures, that is the level size of our head. If we don't have very much confidence in whatever, it will show up as behaviors and responses to situations that indicate that. You can see clearly from a person's behaviors how much Shraddha they have, how much belief conviction they have. Ritam as a word means truth as it is, and Satyam as a word means truth as it can be communicated. So on a personality level, what are the wings that allow a person to be free? Their capacity to perceive and their capacity to communicate. And you can give different practices that work specifically on a person's perception. Mr. Deshikachar, who was the man I studied with, he one time gave a man a camera and instructions, please take pictures of symmetry in the world. This was his yoga practice. Not exhale, hold after exhale so long, not do, you know, this long of a shoulder stand and then that way long, you know, et cetera, Bhujangasana did it. No. Here's your yoga practice. Here's a camera. Please take pictures of symmetry. Why? Because he's working specifically on the person's ritam, their capacity to perceive. And he's exercising it. Same thing when you talk about communication. There are so many practices that work on a person's communication. Chanting is one. When somebody starts chanting, there's so much that happens with their voice and their relationship to their voice. You know, if you have ever taken a vow not to lie, not even little white lies, it has huge impact. You try this practice, you see how developed your left wing of your Vijnanamaya bird is. These are just some examples. But the point here is that we have models from India where yoga developed for a couple of thousand years before it started traveling around the globe. And we should be utilizing and we should be mining Indian epistemologies, Indian knowledge structures. We should be thinking about, we should be looking for what was traditional classifications of how the human system functioned. I'll give you a hint. Number one is prana. Number two is agni, you know, heat, the capacity to digest. Number three is mind. This is why in Hatha Yoga you get prana, agni, and moon. Sun and moon is fire and mind. Where do they, what are they? What's flowing in there or near there? Prana. These are the categories of how the human system functions. We have these models. We have been trying to translate a practice which takes the movement of the body in coordination with the breath. You know, if you take the movement of the body in coordination with the breath, that requires a lot of attention, enormous attention. And so what have you done? You now have a practice which is Annamaya, Manomaya, Pranamaya, right? You have body, that's Annamaya. You have the body following the breath, that's Pranamaya. The amount of attention that is required to have that happen is Manomaya. Now we have a multidimensional practice. Just think of how, if you're doing asana without coordinating it with breath, you're missing one of the huge fundamental aspects of what the practice is meant to influence. If you do asana without breath in front of the TV, then you're just doing stretching. That's a single Maya practice. Yoga is a multidimensional practice. Its tools are intended to utilize that multidimensionality and to shift how your system functions.
Alrighty, everyone. I think there were so many practical tools that you shared, Chase, and we always like to ask just one last question of all of our speakers, and we're wondering, what is your top tip in order for folks to stay embodied?
Yeah,
good question.
What is my top tip for in order to stay embodied? You know, it's my opinion that the main tool of yoga is self-observation, which is how I would translate svadhyaya. You know, in the West, this is often given as mindfulness. And mindfulness is a wonderful thing, etc. And yoga has its own categories and descriptions of it and how to operate in it. But fundamentally, yoga works because someone is curious about why they feel the way they do, or why they have the experience that they have, etc. And the last thing I would say is that the most important thing to have in your yoga practice is a relationship with a teacher. In other words, you are working with the person one-on-one. They know you well. They themselves have a teacher. They themselves are applying this observation and thinking about, why am I doing this? And getting guidance from outside themselves.
Fantastic. I'm wondering, Chase, where can people find you if they're looking to connect with you a little bit more about this topic and enjoy and share in some of your learnings that you have to offer?
Sure. My website is yogawell.com. Yoga Well, you know, a well is a technology that allows you to access a resource deep inside. Yogawell.com. I have a lot of online offerings. I teach regularly meditation theory, yoga sutras, etc. A lot of philosophy things, practices. So you can find me on there. I would like to do a little bit of chanting to close, if you don't mind.
Unfortunately, we don't have time at this moment. We're just trying to be super mindful about everyone's ability to not experience Zoom burnout. So sure. Fortunately, we are going to have to end here. What I will say, folks, is if you do want to watch Chase's section again and continue to gain more, I know at a point there were so many notes I wanted to take and just didn't have time. And if you've been feeling that way in all the channels, the link is below. Abby has posted that so you can upgrade to the conference and buy the full library. There are coffee breaks available, as well as all of Chase's information, so you're able to connect with him. Thank you again so much, Chase, for being absolutely incredible. It seemed like time just flew by. We really appreciate you.
Thank you all.
Bye. Thank you, everyone.